Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is Tuesday, September 1st, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me already in the month of September. Bring it on. The title of today's podcast is What's the Endgame? I may have used this as a title before. I definitely know I've asked this question in the past, but it's worth bringing it up again for today's discussion because I really want to know what the endgame is. We're going to talk about moratoriums today, market performance, and then just a broader discussion centered around that question of what's the endgame. First is some market performance and market news. We have Australia. Second quarter GDP sinks, enters recession. The Australian economy shrank 7 percentage points quarter over quarter in the second quarter of 2020 after a 0.3 percentage fall in the first quarter and worse than market consensus of a decline of 5.9%. It was the largest quarterly contraction since record-keeping began in 1959 and entering the first recession in 30 years as the COVID-19 crisis took a huge toll on the economy. Household consumption collapsed. Fixed investment shrank the most since the fourth quarter of 2000, and inventories fell further. Also, both exports and imports plunged. How's the Australian exchange doing right now, you might ask? Oh, it's up nearly 2 percentage points. Because bad news is great news in this topsy-turvy world. Now, I understand this is information that already happened. Markets are supposed to be forward-looking, so you can make that argument, obviously. But this is just becoming par for the course. It was much worse than market expectations. Again, a decline of 7%. Market was anticipating a decline of 5.9%. And we still ain't seen nothing yet, folks. Not even close. And we're going to talk about that, obviously, when we get into the moratoriums, because there was some news on that today. The dollar index is back. It now has a 92 handle. Recall yesterday's discussion, it was at 91. It is now at 92.36. Again, the dollar index gaining back a little ground. Nothing goes straight down. Nothing goes straight up. We will continue to monitor the strength or weakness of the U.S. dollar for certain. Well, the stock market, and that's actually probably the best way to talk about it, the stock singular, because it's really just basically one company or really a handful. Apple up another 4 percentage points today. Tesla actually giving back 4.7%. I mean, why not? I guess, you know, you got to at least have a semblance of some sort of market functioning. It was up 12.5% yesterday. So I guess a little bit of a pullback is A-OK. I mean, I'm just waiting for Amazon to announce a 10-to-1 split because they're trading at $3,500 a share. Could you imagine people thinking they're going to be 10 times wealthier if Amazon announces a 10-to-1 stock split? We'll keep you posted. WTI trading at $43 a barrel, Brent at $45.90, natural gas trading at $2.51, spot gold $1,964 an ounce, spot silver $28.09, both down for the day. Uncle Sam's U.S. 10-year Treasury junk note yielding 0.69%. On to some moratorium news today. The Trump administration announces nationwide eviction moratorium through the end of the year. That's a head-scratcher because didn't we watch their circus last week and didn't they say everything was A-OK, everything was perfect? I mean, very little mention of the pandemic at all. Basically just a blip on a screen. Don't have to worry about it. Jobs are roaring back. So if jobs are roaring back and so many more are in the pipeline, then why would the Trump administration announce a nationwide eviction moratorium through the end of the year? It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. Or is the administration lying to us for the umpteenth million time? Yeah, I think that's probably it. That's probably the answer. Wake up, folks. It's in your face every single day. Every single day. You have a choice between two demented jokers. At least acknowledge that fact. You do not have to vote for them. There are other options available. Consider them. This is out of USA Today. Relying on a public health law intended to prevent the spread of an illness, the Trump administration said Tuesday it is implementing a national four-month moratorium on residential evictions. The moratorium announced by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was the latest measure by the administration to get a handle on the economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic, absent an agreement with Congress on a far more reaching package that would have the force of law behind it. To stop evictions, health officials are relying on the 1944 Public Health Service Act, which gives the administration broad quarantine powers. The moratorium, which will run through December 31st, applies to individuals earning less than $99,000 a year and who are unable to make rent or housing payments. So this is going to go through the end of the year. How convenient in an election year. Very nice of them. Very convenient, isn't it? Coincidental, I'm sure. And then it applies to individuals earning less than $99,000 a year. What about people making more than $99,000 a year? Are we supposed that all of these people making six figures or above have their financial affairs in order? Because we know that's not the case. We know a significant portion of six-figure households live paycheck to paycheck, just like another significant portion of this country. So how is that going to pan out? President Trump is committed to helping hardworking Americans stay in their homes and combating the spread of the coronavirus, White House spokesman Brian Morgenstern told reporters on Tuesday. And then it's kind of funny because USA Today then puts in another headline that you can link to that says Trump goes maskless in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and urges others to do the same. The move drew a mixed reaction from housing experts. Praise that it would potentially keep tens of millions of Americans in their homes, but concerned that it only moves back a deadline, potentially setting people up for evictions next year because they would continue to accrue back payments during the pause in evictions. Ta-da! There is no free lunch, ladies and gentlemen, which begs the question, what's the end game? What's going to happen here? I've posed the question many times before. What's the end game? And if they're just going to print money, why do you have to pay your bills? Why do you have to pay taxes? It doesn't make any sense. So I want to know, as an American citizen, as an American taxpayer, what the end game is. What are they going to do with all of this debt that continues to accrue? Because if people can't pay 1 month's rent, how on God's green earth are they going to pay back rent for several months? How are they going to do it? How are they going to do it? It's also not clear how the move affects landlords, who must continue to make their own payments. Wow, my goodness. The very least the federal government ought to do is assure each of us that we won't lose our homes in the middle of a global pandemic, said National Low Income Housing Coalition President and CEO Diane Yentl. But while an eviction moratorium is an essential step, it is a half measure that extends a financial cliff for renters to fall off when the moratorium expires and rent back rent is owed. So what would this individual, what would CEO Diane Yentl, what would be her argument for this to be completely forgiven? Well, then why would people who actually may still have a job, what's their incentive to keep paying their bills too? This is what this is coming down to. You understand this? This is what it's going to come down to. People who don't have the means to do it are going to be forgiven. To people that do have the means, oh yeah, you got to keep paying taxes and you got to keep paying your bills. Well, they didn't pay theirs. Oh, they had all that forgiven. Why do I have to keep paying mine? If it doesn't pay to do the right thing, people aren't going to pay. You get it? Doug Bibby, president of the National Multifamily Housing Council, said his organization is, quote, disappointed that the administration enacted an eviction moratorium without funding for rental and unemployment assistance, the group advocates for the apartment industry. An eviction moratorium will ultimately harm the very people it aims to help by making it impossible for housing providers, particularly small owners, to meet their financial obligations and continue to provide shelter to their residents. Here you have it, folks. I've stated it here for the past several months. I'm going to state it here again. Bingo, hitting the nail on the head. A lot of landlords are middle-class Americans. They buy a second house, a third house. They want to rent it out. They want to get some cash flow coming in. They look at it as a long-term investment. By the time they retire, they own the properties, you know, free and clear. They have the equity built into it. Got the cash flow coming in. Not too bad. Not too bad. But if you have these moratoriums and the renters don't have to pay, but the landlords still do, well, how does that work? How does that work? And Bob Pinnegar, president and CEO of the National Apartment Association, said his organization and its members were deeply concerned by the moratorium. He said the lack of money for rental assistance risked creating a cascade when apartment owners did not receive rental payments and then fell behind on maintaining their properties or paying property taxes or mortgages. Another bingo moment. Falling behind on their property taxes. We already know the many shortfalls that exist within the states and localities. This is just going to be a continuation of this. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin told lawmakers on Capitol Hill earlier Tuesday that the announcement on evictions would likely leave them, quote, pleased. But he acknowledged it was not a substitute for congressional action. What is this idiot talking about? The announcement on evictions will likely leave them, quote, pleased. Who is he referring to? Congress? They're going to be pleased because they don't have to go back to their constituents and tell them the truth? Renters? Why? Because this is all going to be forgiven at the end of the day? Who's going to be pleased? I would like to know. I would like to know. The White House and congressional Democrats have stalled in talks to approve another stimulus. Of course, that means spending bill. There is no stimulus. We don't have the money, but they don't care. Allowing many relief programs to expire. Our first choice is to have bipartisan legislation that allocates specific rental assistance to the people hardest hit. This would be Mnuchin. Asked about an Aspen Institute estimate of that 30 to 40 million Americans were at risk of eviction, Mnuchin said the estimate was absurdly high, arguing the executive orders on enhanced unemployment benefits could help Americans pay rent. Of course, that executive order is 100% unconstitutional, but that thing's been through the shredder so many times you can't even read it. Quote, I think this is nothing close, end quote, to what was seen during the 2007 mortgage and housing crisis, Mnuchin said. I know, it isn't nothing close. It's that much worse. You had 10 million Americans over the course of a couple years face eviction during the great financial crisis. This one, again, you have estimates 30 to 40 million, even if you want to scrap that. You had the previous estimate of 20 to 30, which we discussed months ago. And even if you were to say 40 million is absurdly high, you would have to cut it down by 3/4, and you're still where we were during the great financial crisis, which was a crisis. Who are these jokers? You see, folks, do you understand the jokers that are in power? Both parties have been screwing you over for generations. I don't know how much more evidence you need. I got 27 trillion pieces of evidence for you. What do you got? You think the other side's better? You think the other side's worse? That's all you got for me? You're going to have to do much better than that to convince me otherwise. I got 27 trillion pieces of evidence. Bring it on. And to that point, because this comes down again to the question of the day, what's the end game? I have a $4.2 trillion national deficit. I got a $26.7 trillion national debt. I have Medicare and Medicaid costs at $1.3 trillion spiraling out of control. I got Social Security, which is going to be insolvent in a few short years. That's $1.1 trillion in outlays. And I got a defense budget at $700 billion because the president tells us that we're out of bullets. All right, make it up. Say what you want to say. I got student loan problem here of $1.7 trillion. Are they going to forgive that? Is that also part of the end game? Is student loan debt forgiveness on the table? 100%, 50%? What's the number going to be? Because this is owed to the government. So any forgiveness is an immediate addition to the deficit and national debt. Potentially as high as $1.7 trillion if they forgive 100% of it. So let's understand what that means if that happens. People who have went to college and who have already paid off their debt, and people who didn't go to college because it wasn't for them, they couldn't afford it, whatever, are going to have to subsidize those who did go to college and still carry a balance. Does that make sense? They do this. If they continue doing these things, if they continue with these moratoriums, if they continue with, if they go down this road of student loan debt forgiveness, the riots, the protests in the street, you ain't seen nothing yet. If they start to tax people more, which is going to happen, to help make up for the severe shortfalls in the underfunded pensions across this country, one state after the next. So if you start to tax people who have worked their rear ends off for 30 to 40 years, who do not have a pension, but are now going to have their taxes increased to make up for some of those shortcomings, you ain't seen nothing yet. Are the politicians aware of this? Is Congress aware of this? The administration aware of this? This is a basic question to ask. This is very logical. Because I hear nothing from either party, from either demented joker, about anything about that short list of things that I just rattled off. I don't hear a damn thing. I hear law and order, and I hear empathy. I hear fighting for the soul of this country, and I hear Sleeping Joe. I don't hear solutions. You got your circus fix for the past 2 weeks on either side. Did you enjoy it? I didn't. Because it's the same circus. It's the same keywords that they throw out there. And that would be an interesting study. Now, I'm sure the political analysts on both sides already have this down pretty much to a science. But I would like to know if there's actually a book, a pamphlet, whatever, in circulation amongst these idiots. I would guess if such a book or pamphlet exists, it might be 1,000 words or less. So we'll just split it up. Got 500 words for the Republicans, 500 words for the Democrats. Keywords, trigger words. And if you say them with the right gusto, with the right passion, using complete sentences, although neither presidential candidate is pretty much capable of doing that. But if you can use these words in such a manner, you too can become president of the United States. Does not matter what your policy stance is. Doesn't matter if you have one. Doesn't matter what you've done in the past. Doesn't matter what your record is. Doesn't matter if you have a vision for the future or if you don't. Study these words. Make complete sentences with them. And you too can be president of the United States. I'm not joking. I can almost assure you that's all it is. And it might be fewer than 1,000 words. It might be fewer. Abortion, Second Amendment, God, country, patriotism, Constitution, Bill of Rights, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Founding Fathers. You're already getting triggered. Your ears perk up there a little bit. I mean, you know what side you're on just by saying a few key words. Supreme Court, conservative justices, liberal justices, climate change, socialism. You get it? It's a handful of words. You put them in a sentence, and what do you got? Bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. Some idiot becomes the president of the United States. And that's exactly what we're going to get in a couple more months. And it's exactly what we're going to have for the next 4 years, and probably the next 4 years after that, and so on, until this system collapses, which is what is going on right now, which is why I'm asking the question, what's the end game? Is this going to be a complete default? Is the government going to default? Are they going to say to all of these bondholders, $27 trillion, we're just not going to pay you. Is it going to be some combination of that in addition to hyperinflation, which by definition too is a default? As far as I'm concerned, some people will make the argument that it isn't, but it is, because you're paying people back in worthless dollars, which again helps those with massive amounts of debt and penalizes those who have done the right thing, who have saved, who have invested. You screwed them because you completely destroyed their purchasing power. They don't have a debt burden. So you're screwing everything that they've worked hard to accumulate. However, everybody who has a massive debt load is relieved because now they get to pay everybody back with a bunch of funny money. This is all coming to a head. This audience knows it. I know it. I can see it as clear as day. I would just like an answer from a politician as to what the end game is going to be. Because neither, and any of these situations, any of these scenarios of an outright default, of hyperinflating it away, is not going to be a pretty picture, to say the least. And will they attempt in the interim, before they make that decision, to raise your taxes? Because they're going to. I don't care what Donald Trump tells you. I don't care what the Republicans tell you. Your taxes are going up, especially at the state and local level. They might be able to get away with maintaining taxes at their current rate, or even perhaps cutting them with the right political power if the Republicans sweep. But guess what, folks? Are they going to cut government spending? Nope, not for a second. Not a chance. So your inflation tax is going up, and that is the most destructive form of taxation that there is. See, the Republicans want you to believe that you can have big government, but you don't have to pay for it. Democrats, on the other hand, they want big government. They advocate for big government, but at least they pretend, at least they tell you that you got to pay for it. Now, there ain't enough money to do it, but at least they're trying to pay for it. The fiscal conservatives, the fiscally responsible party, supposedly, doesn't tell you this. No, it's a free lunch, they want you to believe. There is no free lunch. That's why you have to be concerned with all of these moratoriums. And again, going back to that simple question once we started reading that article from the USA Today on the moratoriums. Why is the Trump administration doing this? You want to come out and talk about the past couple jobs report? Booming jobs report. Everything's coming back. It's a V-shaped recovery. Then why do people have to be concerned about being evicted? Doesn't make any sense. And why only till the end of the year? Why not indefinite? These are some basic questions to ask. I would hope you ask your congressmen and senators these questions. I'm going to. Because I want to know. Because I'm paying for it. I want to know why corporate America can get bailed out at the drop of a hat to the tune of billions of dollars. I want to know why the Federal Reserve, in conjunction with the blessing of the Treasury Department, through BlackRock, a money management firm, who has on its board of directors, advisory board, a senior employee there, I can't remember his exact title, Stanley Fisher, however, is his name, a former governor of the Federal Reserve System, working for BlackRock. Just a coincidence, surely. How can this happen at the drop of a hat? And yet hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Americans, are still awaiting their first payment from the unemployment office. How can this be? How can there be 30 million Americans claiming to be underfed? Even if you don't believe the number, which is completely fine, I'm somewhat skeptical of it myself, but even if you were to say 50%, 15 million Americans underfed. Disgrace. Here's another little interesting statistic for you again, courtesy of the U.S. debt clock. Corporate tax revenue, $173 billion. $173 billion. That's corporate tax revenue. That's all corporations. $173 billion. Jeff Bezos' net worth is higher than that amount. So these corporations, they pay no taxes. They get all the bailout money at the drop of a hat. You got to wait. You got to wait in the food line. You got to wait for your check. Does this make sense? Do you support this? Do you want to pay for this? Is this Biden's America? Because he ain't the president. I'm not defending Joe Biden. He's an idiot. He's been there for 47 years. He's done nothing. But this isn't Biden's America. Trump's in the Oval Office. The buck stops with the president, as we're told. Now, of course, he takes no responsibility. He says so himself. But do you get the picture? You understand the game that's being played? You understand the big club? You ain't in it. That's what the Capital News is all about. I'm trying to educate this audience through the news. This isn't a breaking news desk. I'm not an investigative journalist. I'm a commentator. I'm an analyst. I want this audience to be educated. I want you to be informed, because you don't get this type of discussion on Fox or MSNBC or CNN or even the business channels. And it is a huge disservice to the people, in my opinion, that these types of conversations are never even had. It's never even brought up. Is it right to do? No, I shouldn't say never, for the sake of fairness. You will get an occasional person on there, a guest, who will bring up some of these issues. But for the most part, the talking heads on these stations, they don't give a damn. I told you, when they're making 6-7 figures, they're going to read what's ever on that teleprompter. And they're not going to pull back the curtain to reveal the system. But that's ultimately what is going on here. Almost by definition, this is the apocalypse, the Greek word that means to reveal. It is the revelation. This is the revelation of a fraudulent, unsustainable, sick system coupled with a sick society. That's why all of these systems are in decay and in decline. That's why trust and confidence in institutions are basically at an all-time low. Because people know it in their gut. Now, some people might be able to articulate the root cause. A lot of people just instinctively know that something is wrong. And they're upset and they're frustrated and they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that's why we had protests before COVID-19. That's why we have them now. And that's why we're going to continue to have them no matter who sits behind the Resolute desk in the Oval Office. Believe me, this is going to get much, much worse before it gets better. This virus, and I'm not talking about COVID-19, I'm talking about this sick system that we have adopted. And, you know, I guess we're going to vote for it again in aggregate in a couple months here because, well, you know, my God, the circus was in town over the past couple of weeks. And, well, I mean, they just turned it all around because they hit all those key words I wanted to hear. And, oh, they put on a good show for me, and now I'm going to go vote for them again, and you're going to get another multi-trillion-dollar deficit, and you're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to pay for it. You still have terrible infrastructure. You still have a terrible K-12 education system. You still have an unethical university system. So where's the money going? Where's it going? What are you getting out of this? Because like I've said many, many times here before, if we were getting something for all this money, well, okay, well, at least you got me there. Well, you got all this great stuff. I might still be opposed to it because I don't think that's the proper role of government, and I don't agree with the taxation, especially not from income, but at least you can say, look, Alex, all these great things are going on out there with all this money. Well, it's not. It's not. So again, I have 27 trillion pieces of evidence. So bring it on. If you think your party is going to solve any of this, because it isn't. I don't know how much more you have to see. How many more pieces of evidence you need? 28 trillion? 29? 30? 40? Highest bidder? I wish I had the auctioneer voice because I'd be doing it right now. But, I mean, how high do we have to go? It's unbelievable. Why do we have to pay taxes? Why do we have to pay our bills? Why is the Federal Reserve allowed to basically just run amok of their charter? Basically, we're just going to make modifications and we really don't care about inflation. If it runs high, it runs hot, we don't care. We're going to make different assessments. We don't care. So where's the oversight on that? Student debt, state and local shortfalls, pension shortfalls, and the moratoriums. I'm sure I'm leaving something out, but those are some pretty big tickets. What's the end game? I'd like to know. And I'd like to know your thoughts and opinions on this, too. So please share and write to the Capital News, capitalnews.com, YouTube channel, wherever you listen. We appreciate it. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.